Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, this is Bruce Norris. We welcome you back this week. We're going to be speaking with John Burns. He's the founder of John Burns Real Estate Consulting. He's also a certified public accountant, has a master's degree from the University of California. John, we welcome you back.
Thanks, Bruce.
I was reading about your goals of your company, and a couple of things it says is we want to be the first to identify a new trend and help our clients act on that trend, and we want to help our clients solve problems that they've never encountered before. I'm wondering about that last line. Is that keeping you pretty busy these days?
Yes. We're actually working for a lot of companies these days that are brand new to the home building industry, so clearly that's ringing very true.
Brand new as in they've just started in the last year, or they are brand new and this is the first down cycle that they've experienced?
No, it's mostly investment groups that have not been investing in real estate. They've been investing in other asset classes and a lot of distressed investor groups, vulture funds, those sorts of things. They may have been doing telecom 7 years ago and airlines 2 years ago, and now they're doing real estate.
Okay, so they're coming and picking up bargains, if you will.
They like bloody industries, yes.
Okay. That sounds like quite a switch then from where we've been before. Has that cycle appeared before where that type of group showed up at the end of, let's say, the 80s?
Sure.
Okay.
This was my clientele in the early 90s, was some of the same groups and same types of folks.
Okay. When they get done with the bloody cycle, do they typically move on, or do some of them become permanently big players?
In the last cycle, they became permanently big players, and there's some household names these days, the Morgan Stanley Real Estate Fund and Colony Capital and Whitehall, which was a Goldman Sachs group. They were all funded during the RTC days and have all gone on to be very successful long-term investors in real estate.
For that opportunity to exist, there has to be blood in the streets from the existing builder clients of, let's say, 2005 and 6. So how are they doing? How are they coping with what's going on?
This is going to sound really like I'm tooting my own horn, but all my builder clients are still doing okay.
Well, you deserve to. If they're doing okay, then you must have told them something that many of them didn't hear.
Well, and they, that's their choice whether or not they want to listen. But this isn't easy for anyone, but I have not lost any builder clients yet, knock on wood. So, but there are a lot of builders that are clearly not going to be able to repay their lenders, and that's where a lot of the opportunities are going to be.
If builders had a do-over, like a mulligan, what would they do differently from what they did, say, from 2005 on?
Oh, how long is your radio show? I wrote a piece on this not too long ago. I really came up with four different ways to manage your company in preparation for a downturn.
Mm-hmm.
If you're an ongoing home building entity and you're not going to get in and out of the market, and if you're a big company, you don't time the market per se. You don't shut it all down for 3 or 4 years and then just start afresh later, like some investors might be able to do.
Correct.
So what the companies that were most prepared for this were keeping their land holdings as short as possible. The number of companies are actually almost out of land right now, and their issue is, John, I can't find any land that I can underwrite, so what am I going to do next year? So that was a successful strategy for some. Others maintained some good discipline to keep their debt balances rather low, even to the point of selling assets every quarter during the good times just to keep the debt to capital down. Another initiative was process improvement and getting more efficient. Some companies poured a lot of money back into becoming a better builder and having better IT systems, and I'm certain they're building homes today $5 or $10 per square foot cheaper than most of the others, and that's going to be a big advantage coming out of this.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, the fourth is the deals you structured. If you could have paid what I'll call insurance costs by taking on an off-balance sheet finance company or a joint venture partner who would take most of the risk in the event of a market downturn, but you would have had to pay him a 12 to 15% return to do that. Those that did that, which were generally the public companies, the private companies were not doing that, have benefited in that they've lost their option deposit on a lot of land, but they haven't lost 100% of the value.
When a builder decides to purchase land, in a boom cycle, do they typically purchase it? Let's say you go back to 2000 and maybe even 1999. Were the land parcels usually purchased for cash, and then later as the cycle matured, there was more options, or is it options always a preferred method?
I think options were almost always the preferred method. You know, some companies feel differently than others because options do cost money. You usually tie the you usually can get the property for less if you're paying all cash. I think most companies preferred to do some sort of option arrangement, but some sellers preferred 100% cash, and so in a number of instances it was all cash or nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But even in those instances, some of those buyers, they'd pay the seller all cash, but they'd find a partner to venture with, so it wouldn't necessarily be all the builder's cash.
When somebody buys a parcel of land all cash, or even creates land lots all of a sudden that they really can't use, do many of them have the holding power just to go out a decade and say, okay, we're just going to wait until it's feasible?
It depends on their balance sheet.
Okay. Does their balance sheet, is that affected by their stock values? Because almost all the builder stocks have really gotten hammered this year.
Well, I think Wall Street clearly looks at that. And I think Wall Street clearly has figured out who's got the best balance sheets and who doesn't. The stocks that have fallen the most this year, I think it's very safe to categorize them as the ones that had the highest levels of debt in comparison to capital.
In California, what would you say has happened to the value of land as far as a percentage down?
Oh, it varies a lot by location, but I'd have to say somewhere in the 70 to 80% drop in value, which, you know, even a little more than that in some of the inland locations. Clearly, if you've got beachfront property, that hasn't occurred there.
Now, is the owner of that piece of land, do they acknowledge that? Or often when somebody owns a home and we talk to them, they still have 2005 values in their head. So I would imagine somebody that owns a piece of land would have a hard time accepting they have 20% of what they did 2 years ago.
Nope, you're right.
Okay. Is it then very difficult for them to, for builders to make a land deal right now? In other words, can they put together a land purchase and begin the whole process of getting to lots? Is there a willing seller at the right price?
We're not finding very much of that.
Okay.
But there's really two types of deals that are going on. One are these big, huge portfolio deals like the Lennar Morgan Stanley deal that was announced in November.
Okay.
Where a large company is essentially selling $1 billion or more worth of land to an investor group with a contract to buy the land back when they need it. It was a way for them to generate some cash. It was also because of the tax laws that allowed you to recapture any taxes paid over the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
It allowed them to generate even more cash by getting a big check back from the IRS, which they could use to pay down debt and other things. So that drove that transaction, and there's a number of other transactions that are being considered. Whether or not the buyer and seller will agree on the price, I'm not sure. The other level of transactions are generally in outlying areas where the builder is selling the land to somebody who does not intend to build on it, who's more of an investor, probably doesn't have a lot of debt, says, you know what, I'll double my money or triple my money sometime. I hope it's 3 years from now, but maybe it's 10. I'll just have to wait and see.
Mm-hmm. Lennar lost over $1 billion in last quarter of 2007. That seems like a lot of money. I know the finance companies are writing down $6 and $10 billion like it's no big deal, supposedly, but once we get into the B word, it seems like that's serious money.
I won't disagree with that.
Do they have lots more billions? I mean, is that, I guess my point is, are these, a lot of these builders, do they, are they able to absorb this without really being worried about going under?
Well, you know, that's not my job. I do read the sell side analyst reports, and some of these guys have billions of dollars of cash on their balance sheet too.
Right. They're in still good shape and can take advantage of maybe some of the deals out there.
Well, I think, and some of them are down to a 30% debt to equity ratio, even after they've written off a lot of this equity. So I think they're trying, well, I know they're trying to position themselves to be a survivor and one who gets to shop for these bargain land deals once the market stabilizes.
How does the builder look at 2008? Is it a year for survival and bargain hunting? Is that pretty much where they put this in the category of?
Yes. And oh. I would say it's more survival at this point, and I think it would be bargain hunting once they can see some visibility or some sort of stability in the market, which we're really not seeing very much of right now.
Okay. How is the supply of homes that they've already built? Is that starting to go down because they're building less?
The construction has fallen considerably, dramatically. So the number of unsold homes is trending down slightly. They're having a very tough time selling the ones that they've already built. But I think it's a bit of a misnomer to say that by the fact that they've cut construction 50%, that somehow there's not an oversupply, because the number of communities really has not come down. So there's still plenty of builders out there, just as many as a year ago almost, who would want to sell you a home.
Okay. And they're not being able to gain enough sales to really affect the supply and month supply at this point?
Not materially, no.
I know it's not strictly in California, but is it predominantly in states that really had a big price boom?
No, right now that's occurring everywhere. The problem since August has been the pullback in the underwriting criteria on mortgages.
Correct.
Which is impacting everybody. And so even in places like Texas, they're now asking for a 3 or 4% down payment, which doesn't sound like much, but that's a big change from a year ago. So it's slowing the number of people who are qualified and who can get a loan. And you need to document your income today, too. So that's a big change that's nationwide.
Yeah, I think if you look at the market in 2005, you wonder, okay, since financing was that easy to obtain, who is left to sell a house to? You know, what would that person, you know, look like on paper? Did they just not want to buy up until now? Do you think we borrowed? I guess I'm really worried that we've borrowed into the future buyers that shouldn't have matured until 2008 and 2009, and we were able to slam them into a loan in 2005 and 2006.
Yes, no, and I've heard stories, and I'm sure they're true, where people were turned down from apartment complexes because they didn't have 2 months of security deposit and a good FICO and ended up as homeowners in the
mm-hmm.
pickle. So there is a lot of that. The sales volumes have fallen to such a very, very low level that the people that are out there buying are really, I put them into maybe three camps. One is just young couples combining income, just got married this year or last year, who are looking. The second would be people who really are relocating for one reason or another. And the third would be people who did not get caught up in the euphoria and were very nervous in 2004, 2005, 2006. And now, particularly with the new home communities, they've seen the prices have fallen as much as 30% or more, and the mortgage rates are pretty low, and they're saying this might be a good time to get a deal.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it could be a little bit cheaper 6 months from now, but interest rates could be higher. Let's not try to time the bottom perfectly.
And they might have a good point, too.
Yeah.
They really might. Going forward, do you see a change in the size of the next batch of new homes that we're likely to see from builders?
They're getting smaller.
They're going to get smaller?
They're going to get smaller, and they're going to get barer. And it is hard to build a smaller home, frankly, because a lot of the cities, particularly in California, don't want to see smaller homes. They want to see the bigger homes. So you got to go back in and get permission in a lot of instances to do that, and that's not so easy.
to downsize the square footage of a tract.
Right.
Now, what's in it for the city? Bigger tax base?
Bigger tax base and generally a higher income resident.
Okay. All right. The builders experienced downturns in the late 70s, early 80s, and then again in 90 to 97. And every time it seems they've overbuilt. And I just wonder, you as a consultant who's been through this, and I know that you warned them that this could go again, why is it so difficult for them to not repeat the same mistakes?
I think most of the guys that lived through that cycle, didn't repeat as many of the mistakes as those that are brand new companies.
Okay.
If you look at the companies that have been around for 30 years, they're generally my clients who are out of land or have really low debt or were using joint venture partners. It's generally the newer companies or the younger management teams, if you will, who got caught up and this would never happen again. Now, I'm not saying that, even the best companies out there didn't get caught up somewhat, but generally, I think those that have lived through some downturns knew there'd be another one someday. They just didn't know when.
Okay. I was reading about the housing cycle barometer, and you mentioned significantly overpriced in comparison to their history. And that's an interesting point. You can have, say, a San Francisco have a very low affordability rate compared to something like Riverside, and we'll get priced out at a very different percentage of affordability.
That's right.
Okay. Why does that occur? What happened in San Francisco that didn't happen or won't happen in Riverside?
Well, San Francisco will never get overbuilt. And that's a market that's a permanently very, very expensive place to live because of the lack of supply.
Mm-hmm.
And people know that. So if you move to San Francisco, you can generally count on having a much higher percentage of your income go toward housing than if you lived in Riverside.
Is it true that probably a lot of people there are more stable and they don't leave, so they literally couldn't afford the own home they live in if they had to requalify for it?
In San Francisco?
Yeah.
I'm sure there's some of that, but I think it was much less so than in areas like Riverside.
Okay.
If you look at the most expensive markets, they did not see the same type of run-up in sales velocity and buying activity that an area like Riverside did.
Okay.
Because people were priced out. And then also, brand new construction, everybody on that street got loans in 2005 because the homes were all built in 2005. Whereas in places like San Francisco, every street has got people that have been in their home for 20 or 30 years and provides a little more stability to the market.
Okay. Going forward, we're probably going to have quite an increase in affordability in California because of our price declines and interest rates getting very reasonable. Do you see that as something that will help immediately or is going to take a lot longer before it kicks in? More affordable housing.
Oh, the new homes have gotten much more affordable. With the Fed dropping interest rates here and some of these other things, that they're going to drive interest rates down too, that's going to make housing much more affordable. And then what happens with mortgage rates will clearly determine a lot of that for us.
Okay. Do you see any of the Fed actions other than the interest rates coming to the rescue? Talking about freezing subprime interest rates and some of the other things that they have in mind. Do you see any of those really playing a big role for housing?
The Paulson Bush plan to freeze interest rates for subprime doesn't do a darn. That'll do nothing.
Okay.
What interest rates dropping significantly is going to do a number of very positive things for the business. And I don't mean that means we're going to have a good year. But if we can get rates down to the point where people in trouble can refinance into a good mortgage, I think that will stem a lot of the foreclosures, certainly not all of them. So I think that could be very positive. I also think by getting the short-term rates low, they're helping out some of these banks who are clearly under stress with the portfolios that they have on their balance sheet.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they can borrow low and lend at a much higher rate, that's going to help the banks weather this downturn too. So I do see some positive in these proposals.
You have this quote on your website: the best local barometer for housing is probably the number of cars on the road during rush hour. So how's the employment picture in 2008 going to affect housing demand, do you think, in California?
Well, in California, I believe we're in a recession right now.
Okay, I would agree.
And nationally, I think we're teetering. So that's something we have not dealt with in the last 2 years, and that essentially means that we'll have fewer adults with jobs this year than we did last year, and that's a decline in demand for housing. So that's going to hurt substantially.
Doesn't that usually coincide with migration exiting as well?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
And that's the whole car point, is that people are getting out. If you lose your job, you got to find one, and if you can't find one locally, you look elsewhere.
We have a presidential election coming up. Do you see any significant tax law changes coming down maybe after 2008 that might have an effect on real estate, like capital gains changes? And
yes, I haven't really studied that, Bruce.
Okay.
It can make a big difference. I should point out that the 97 tax law that allowed you to sell your home at a huge gain every 2 years tax-free encouraged a lot of the flipping that occurred in this cycle.
You can't blame anybody.
No, and I wouldn't be surprised if they undid that.
I wouldn't be surprised either. That's a very big giveaway that they would take away. 500 grand every 2 years for a couple.
Yeah, but let's face it, I think you and I are both in the same camp, that nobody's going to make a couple hundred grand on their house anymore in a two-year period, at least in the short term.
That's true. That was an odd tax law in the first place, because so few states in the whole country would have ever had that chance.
Yeah, I don't know why they pushed that through in the first place.
Do some of the builders that you deal with also cross over to the commercial world?
Yes.
Okay. Now, how is that sector going, and how do you see that?
Well, that sector has been wonderful for them that have that, because they're cash-flowing assets that are paying payroll and doing very, very well. The commercial real estate market is probably in the first or second inning of a correction right now, and I think that the retail centers are going to see much more of a correction than the other sectors.
Mm-hmm.
Office will see some, particularly in Orange County with all the loss of lenders. But the problem in the commercial real estate sector had more to do with cap rates, or the multiple on earnings that people were paying, which was just insane.
Right, way too low compared to normal.
Right.
All right. Now, let's say that returns to something that's reasonable. That really devalues the other purchases that were made.
Right. So if your whole portfolio was purchased recently, or you refinanced it with high debt recently, you're in big trouble. But if you've owned this for 10 or 15 years and watched the values go up but didn't refinance it, you'll be fine.
Correct. If the owner is in big trouble, ultimately that means the lender is going to own some property.
Right.
You expect that's going to start to occur in California, commercial foreclosures?
No question. I've been told that there's even some portfolios of commercial loans that are being traded around Wall Street at discounts already.
Okay. That would make sense. Last question for this time. Thank you, by the way, for joining us. What website address can you give us so I make sure I get that in?
Realestateconsulting.com.
Okay. The new Fannie Mae loan limit, do you feel that that's going to have a big impact in California?
I think it could have a huge impact in California, primarily because it will allow some of those troubled borrowers to get a lower interest rate loan and maybe get a loan that's fixed for 5 or 7 years or maybe even 30 years and refinance out of a bad loan.
I agree. I hope they make it permanent instead of temporary. Well, John, thanks again for joining us. I really appreciate you taking time. And we will talk again.
All right, thanks.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.